We're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the BCP podcast. I am James, aka Black Conservative Patriot, BCP. Let's look at today's news and see that the United States of America, the Great Republic, has become nothing but a land of lawlessness and disorder, when it should be the other way around, where we should be priding ourselves in a country of law and order. And let's start off with the latest in the continued persecution of our duly elected and beloved president, Donald John Trump.
We begin with some developing news in New York's civil fraud case against Donald Trump.
Yeah, his lawyers have just told the court that Trump will not be able to secure the bond to cover the nearly $500 million civil fraud judgment.
Once again, the two-tier justice system and the all-out lawfare war against President Trump. Attorney General Letitia James of New York, along with her cohort, her comrade, Purvey, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch not Project Veritas, but OMG, the O'Keefe Media Group, showing that, in fact, Judge Engeron, the judge in the supposed fraud case of President Trump, is, in fact, a pervert. No jury. The judge decides that he's guilty of inflating values, because AG Letitia James said that Trump inflated values, and that's why he got preferential treatment and better interest rates on his loans that he paid back, and everyone made money, even though they're not supposed to take his word for what he says. They did their own due diligence, and they were happy to do business with him. But now he's got this fine that keeps ballooning because of daily interest. Now, if this whole thing's a sham, and President Trump has filed an appeal, but he can't get that appeal until he first posts the bond. And lo and behold, he can't get a bond. What a sham.
According to the filing, his attorneys say it's been an impossible task trying to get a bond in the full amount, even after approaching 30 surety companies through four separate brokers.
Look, on a matter of principle, it may be something different, but as a matter of business and risk, it's a liability doing business with President Trump. Look at the banks that went through the ringer because they gave President Trump loans, and then they were called into court, had to have legal representation and costs and exposure just because they did business with President Trump on a illegitimate fraud case. Who would want to do business with President Trump? But it's not just that, it's the way President Trump holds his assets and how these how every one of these insurance companies want to get the surety or the collateral for said bond.
Now, last month, Trump was convicted by a New York state judge for falsifying business records. Trump appealed the decision, but the appeal can only move forward if he pays the bond in the full amount. And underwriters want cash for the bond, not properties.
Donald Trump is facing $500 million in legal penalties, an amount that's growing by tens of thousands every day. The judgment in his New York civil fraud trial represents one of the biggest tests of the former president's personal wealth in decades.
His attorneys say they've spent countless hours negotiating with one of the largest insurance companies in the world. His lawyers asked the appeals court to delay posting the bond until the appeal process is over, saying that Trump's properties are worth far more than the $464 million judgment against him.
Yes, President Trump is worth a lot more, but why should he put up his cash on a false and bogus entire sham that he could win on appeal? So he wants to put up real estate, and they don't want real estate. Interestingly enough, Wall Street Journal, who has been no friend to President Trump since they went totally woke 7 or 8 or 9 years ago, even they brought in one of their editors to talk about President Trump is doing quite well. His wealth has gone down because a lot of his wealth has to do with his brand, and they have tarnished his brand, supposedly. President Trump is very more well-liked, not just in the United States, but internationally, than the mainstream media and your leftist cousin and aunt would have you believe. But President Trump has more than enough assets to make putting up these bonds a good business risk.
We asked Wall Street Journal editor Peter Grant to break down where the former president's wealth stands today.
We've looked at his business for a long time, and our best guess is that his net worth today is roughly around $3 billion. Trump is under a lot of stress right now, but it doesn't compare with the kind of stress that he was facing during the recession of the early 90s.
Trump managed to survive the recession and then changed his tactics.
He started to leverage more his name, his brand. He would sell his brand to developers who would be building projects. They'd put the Trump name on it, but Trump wouldn't have the risk. One of the things that Trump has done to shore up his balance sheet in recent years is sell assets. Trump has numerous assets throughout the world. They're primarily in the U.S., the ones he owns. He owns resorts, condos, hotels, and he has pretty big stakes in some big office buildings. The Trump balance sheet today is much stronger than it used to be. It has roughly $400 million of cash on it, and he's deleveraged by about $300 million, which puts him in the position of increasing leverage if he needs fast cash.
You may have noticed that the persecution of Trump and this amount that they're after, Attorney General Letitia James and Judge Engoron, is by design. President Trump is worth $3 billion, and they originally were going after a $250 million fine, which then ballooned up to like $340 million. Now we're at almost half a billion dollars, $400 million plus and counting, plus the daily interest against that. And isn't that a coinkydink that it happens to match the exact amount of cash that President Trump has? What are they trying to do? They're trying to bleed him dry, plain and simple. It's not an accident that the amount went from $250 million to roughly about the amount of cash reserves that Trump has.
Those cash reserves are now in question as his legal troubles mount. On February 16th, a New York judge ordered Trump to pay $355 million in penalties, plus another $100 million in interest, which will continue to grow by roughly $100,000 per day.
And of course, this is all coordinated, right? It's not just what he's going through in New York with Attorney General Letitia James. He also has the Alvin Bragg situation. He has the Fannie Willis situation, the RICO case. He's got the Jack Smith situation. And as far as lawlessness and disorder against him, he was found guilty of sexual assaulting E. Jean Carroll, even though we don't know exactly when it happened. There's no witnesses, and the whole thing is made up. But once again, that was the initial stress test of getting at President Trump's finances.
Earlier this month, he was able to get a nearly $92 million bond from Chubb Insurance Company for the civil defamation judgment involving writer E. Jean Carroll, who claimed she was raped by the former president. He has also appealed that decision.
Now, CNN is reporting on this. As a matter of fact, my wife, the missus, was watching CNN over here for news when we turn on satellite or the television. Fox is not really an option. It's CNN, BBC, DW, what have you. But CNN seems to be giving a lot of coverage and gloating that President Trump is in this situation.
And that's why we're seeing this new information come out today, saying they're unable to post the bond of this magnitude. They can't get anyone to underwrite it because it is just a large amount, and particularly a large amount for one individual.
So Trump, a multi-billionaire with more than enough cash to cover the bond if he loses on appeal. No one wants to touch him, even though he's a good risk, because he wants to put up as collateral his real estate holdings. And that's not what they want. They want cash, or they want stocks, they want paper. And that's not what President Trump wants to put up. So let's see what happens. I will stay on top of this story. But that's not all. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. And we're going to see here that today, Sam Alito, I would say the greatest Supreme Court justice right now, after Clarence Thomas, who is number one, is playing both villain and hero today.
Breaking news out of the Supreme Court. Justice Samuel Alito has indefinitely extended a stay on a controversial immigration enforcement law in Texas. The law allows state officials to arrest migrants accused of crossing into the U.S. illegally. The Biden administration is challenging the measure. A federal appeals court is set to hear arguments about the case next month.
So Sam Alito is buying into the, or being prudent in letting the courts look at the idea that Biden, as people are putting forward, that the federal government has preeminence and authority first and foremost over border control, not the states. And while that plays out in the court, Sam Alito says, we're going to keep the stay. Texas will be unable to enforce their law that allows them to arrest illegal aliens, which of course they're doing, because in fact the federal government is not enforcing the law, much to the detriment of Texas. So Sam Alito perhaps doing the right thing by the law. Let's be honest, there has been a tradition of preeminence of federal law over state law, but we've never been in a situation where these laws have been blatantly disregarded by the current regime, like we're seeing right now. That is where he's a villain today in my book, but he's an absolute hero when it comes to what is going on in the Supreme Court hearing over our First Amendment rights and the collusion, the conspiracy, the skullduggery, the incestuous relationship between the U.S. government and the deep state and their power, their buddy-buddy, their bed buddies in big tech, and how the government was in bed with big tech, Facebook, Google, Instagram, etc., to quash free speech and push their propaganda under the guise of whatever they want to call it. For instance, during the 2020 pandemic, misinformation or disinformation. This is what the great Senator Rand Paul tweeted out on Monday about the Murthy versus Missouri case. Today, the Supreme Court of the United States heard Murthy versus Missouri, the most consequential free speech case in U.S. history. This isn't just about social media companies. It's a critical examination of government overreach. The Biden administration and FBI's efforts to influence big tech into silencing dissent tramples on the First Amendment. Our focus must be on preventing government censorship, not compelling private entities to act as censors. This case could redefine our free speech. And this is where we get into Justice Sam Alito being a hero. This is what he had to say during this hearing about the dangerous partnership between the U.S. government and big tech, in this case, Facebook, in censoring Americans and crushing their First Amendment rights.
Exchange between the White House and other federal officials and Facebook in particular, but also some of the other platforms. And I see that the White House and federal officials are repeatedly saying that Facebook and the federal government should be partners. We're on the same team. Officials are demanding answers. I want an answer. I want it right away. When they're unhappy, they curse them out. Their regular meetings, there is constant pestering of Facebook and some of the other platforms, and they want to have regular meetings, and they suggest, why don't you, they suggest rules that should be applied, and why don't you tell us everything that you're going to do so we can help you and we can look it over. And I thought, wow, I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media, our representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be?
Justice Sam Alito making a great point, this reading these emails, and we've seen them thanks to Matt Taibbi, and now that Twitter is mostly a free speech platform, this expose of what was going on in big tech, we're able to see because of this investigative journalism that has come out and things that have come out, that we have the government buddy-buddy and getting mad when they wouldn't push the narrative of the establishment coming out of D.C. I mean, what chutzpah to do that? Obviously, they're coming from a place where they have authority and power over big tech. Now, Sam Alito asked a question, how come they're not doing this? How come we allowed them to do it to big tech, but not to print? Sam Alito seems to feign naivety when it comes to this, because we haven't seen, you know, obviously we've seen these email exchanges between the White House and DC and Facebook. We haven't seen necessarily that yet on how they put the squeeze on the New York Times, the AP, and etc. But go back and do your homework. There are a lot of people in the government who are literally married to their spouses, are in high positions or in leadership positions in mainstream media. Perhaps they don't have to give them the ringer like they have to, like they felt they had to do with Mark Zuckerberg and people at big tech. And of course, they can all the evil players, all these treasonous, traitorous rat bastards in the government can do this under the guise of Section 230 protection. And Alito just isn't buying it.
And so I thought, you know, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket, and it's, to mix my metaphors, and it's got these big clubs available to it. And so it's treating Facebook and these other platforms like they're subordinates. Would you do that to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press or any other big newspaper or wire service?
Now, legal representation for the illegitimate regime of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. tries to downplay this and say, well, you know, it was only a few instances, and it was only because, you know, the pandemic, we must save and help the people know real information. In other words, we must block anything that lets people cure themselves, I don't know, of COVID with cheap, readily available drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. We can't let people know about that. That would get in the way of big pharma profits and their bioweapon masquerading as a COVID-19 vaccine.
So there's a lot packed in there. I want to give you one very specific answer first and then step back out to the broader context.
So who we heard previously, obviously, was Sam Alito. Who we're listening to now is Brian Fletcher. He's the U.S. Principal Deputy Solicitor General, arguing on behalf of the U.S. government.
So specifically, you mentioned demanding an answer right away and cursing them out. The only time that happens is in an email that's about the president's own Instagram account. It's not about moderating other people's
content. Okay, we'll put that aside. There's all the rest. So, constant meetings, constant emails. We want answers.
Right.
We're partners. We're on the same team. Do you think that the print media regards themselves as being on the same team as the federal government, partners with the federal government?
So potentially in the context of an effort to get Americans vaccinated during a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And I really think that piece of context, it doesn't change the First Amendment principles, but it's relevant to how they apply here. And I think it's important to understand that at this time, this was a time when thousands of Americans were still dying every week, and there was a hope that getting everyone vaccinated could stop the pandemic. And there was a concern that Americans were getting their news about the vaccine from these platforms, and the platforms were promoting, not just posting, well, but promoting bad information.
Yeah, people were talking about hydroxychloroquine. They were talking about ivermectin. They were talking about don't get intubated, do not go to the hospital because people are dying. Social media, people are being social and sharing their thoughts, you know, practicing their free speech. And that's a danger when all these politicians have money invested in Pfizer and AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, and nothing is going to stop them from making that moolah, that money, especially a Facebook or a YouTube that they have influence and control over.
I understand all that, and I know the objectives were good, but once again, they were also getting their news from the print media and the broadcast media and cable media, and I just can't imagine the federal government doing that to them. But maybe I'm naive. Maybe that goes on behind the scenes. I don't know, but it struck me as, wow, this is not what I understand the relationship to be. That's all.
I think this is important because I have the same reaction that you do, that these emails look unusual.
So Brian Fletcher, actually one of the better attorneys that I've heard for the government as of late, probably wasn't a diversity hire. He's actually pretty good, even though he's not on our side. He does that tactic, you know, where you feign, oh, I understand how you feel about this. They call it in sales, feel, felt, found. I know how you feel. I have felt the same way. What I found is, and then you use some sort of argument or logic to then present your side of the case. I mean, this is classic feel, felt, found being presented here by Brian Fletcher, the U.S. Principal Deputy Solicitor General. I know how you feel, Sam Alito. These emails look very, very unusual. I felt the same way. I feel the same way when I look at them. But what I found is, and what he says next, is an absolute scary admission of what's really going on and has been going on for a long time.
I think the idea that there'd be back and forth between the government and the media isn't unusual at all. When the White House press secretary on July 16th is asked about this by the press at the time, what she says is, of course we talk to the platforms just the way we talk to all of you when we have concerns about what you're doing, when we have information that you might find helpful. Now, there's an intensity of the back and forth here, and there's an anger that I think is unusual, but the context for that, I think, is that these platforms were saying publicly, we want to help. We think we have a responsibility to give people accurate information and not bad information, and we're doing everything we can to meet that goal. That's where this language of partnership comes from. It's not just from the White House. It's these platforms, which are powerful, sophisticated entities, saying we're doing the best we can. And the anger, I think really most of the anger when you read the emails, and I appreciate that you have, because I think you have to look at them in context, the anger is when the officials think that the platforms are not being transparent about the scope of the problem or aren't giving information that's available.
So there you have it, the classic feel, felt, found. I'm sure some of you have experience this with a salesperson or a counselor or a therapist or what have you. They acknowledge how you feel. They relate to you and that feeling. You know, they have felt the same way. But what they have found is, and then they present something. Once they've established that they're on your side in your feelings, then they bring forth something else to change your mind. And that's exactly what Mr. Fletcher is doing here. But the admission is huge that this has always been going on. It's always been buddy-buddy between the government and media, you know, to get the right information out to people. So that is Sam Alito as the hero or the good guy. Now let's go to the other villain that we had today, a villain who doubled down on the idea that this is all okay. And I'm talking about low IQ, diversity hire, and it hurts me to say that as a black man about a fellow black person, but let's call a spade, no pun intended. Low IQ diversity hire, Ketanji Brown Jackson, has no problem with this at all. It's okay for the government to be in the business of censorship.
But whether or not the government can do this, this is something I took up with Mr. Fletcher, depends on the application of our First Amendment jurisprudence, and there may be circumstances in which the government could prohibit certain speech on the internet or otherwise. I mean, do you Do you disagree that we would have to apply strict scrutiny and determine whether or not there is a compelling interest in how the government has tailored its regulation?
The legal representative for the state of Louisiana, Benjamin Anguignaga, the Louisiana Solicitor General, is the one having the back and forth with Ketanji Brown Jackson on this point of the law.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think at the end of every First Amendment analysis, you'll have the strict scrutiny framework in which, you know, in some national security hypos, for example, the government may well be able to demonstrate a compelling interest, may well be able to demonstrate.
All right. Not every situation will in which the government engages in conduct that ultimately has some effect on speech necessarily becomes a First Amendment violation, correct?
Maybe not necessarily, Your Honor. I guess the top line question I would ask is, has the government set out to abridge the freedom of speech? And in this case, you see that time and time again, because if you control...
But that's not the test for First Amendment violations.
Your Honor, this flows from the plain text of the First Amendment, right? No,
Ketanji Brown Jackson is literally saying Facebook, in partnership with the government, quashing free speech about the vaccine or anything else. Don't forget also, let's say, the election results of the stolen election of 2020 and the stolen midterms of 2022. But in this context, it's about the vaccines and health and COVID-19, that it's okay for the government to do this because sometimes the government can do this. And Mr. Asenaga says, well, yeah, sometimes in cases of national security, but this isn't it. He literally saying this is plainly a violation of our First Amendment rights. And Ketanji Brown Jackson, in her full-on Marxist way of thinking, doesn't see it that way at all. The government is in the right.
I understand, but we have a test for a determination of whether or not the First Amendment is actually violated. So in certain situations, the government can actually require that speech be suppressed if there's a compelling interest, right?
A justice of the Supreme Court, who is supposed to uphold the Constitution, doubling and tripling down on it's okay for the government to suppress free speech. Notice she says speech. She's going to say free speech, but she corrects herself and just says, it's okay for the government to suppress speech if it's for, you know, if it's for the greater good, if the government deems that it is good for the people. This is total philosophy of a Marxist.
The government can actually require that speech be suppressed if there's a compelling interest, right?
It can, Your Honor, and I guess what I would say is that the courts below never got to strict scrutiny because the government never raised this. This has never been litigated. The question in this case is whether at the front end, the government itself has undertaken
action. Is the coercion, is the state action, right? That's the question in this case.
And I would urge the court to address the state action issue just like you addressed it in Banta Books.
The courts need to address this and put this to bed and to rest and to make a definitive ruling about government and free speech. And that is, once again, I want to return to the tweet from late last night at 10 p.m. by the great Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. SCOTUS's hearing of the Murphy versus Missouri is the most consequential free speech case in U.S. history. This isn't just about social media companies. It's a critical examination of government overreach. The Biden administration and the FBI's effort to influence big tech into silencing dissent tramples on the First Amendment. This case could redefine our free speech. Our focus must be on preventing government censorship, not compelling private entities to act as censors. Again, Senator Rand Paul saying this case could redefine our free speech. This is huge, folks. And that is what the Solicitor General here is arguing, that yes, the courts haven't heard this. This needs to be decided. But Ketanji Brown Jackson wasn't done there. She goes on to, I don't know, double, triple, quadruple, quintuple down on her defense of the government being able to suppress free speech in violation of our very first amendment to the Constitution, which she has taken an oath to uphold.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods.
Ketanji Brown Jackson is lamenting the fact that the government is hamstrung, is reined in, is controlled by the same constitutional amendments, Bill of Rights, that limits their powers. That's the whole point of it, to stop tyranny. She is upset that our Constitution and the proper interpretation of our Constitution hamstrings, reins in tyranny. This is a justice on the Supreme Court. Let that sink in. And the gravity of the situation becomes very apparent. I'm pretty sure we can bet that Ketanji Brown Jackson isn't going to vote in favor of free speech and the Constitution when we finally get the ruling on all of this.
What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
This is a classic argument that security is greater than freedom. It is important that the government have the power to suppress free speech because they are like our parents. They must tell us what to do, what's good for us, and that overrides the Constitution. That is very worrisome to us libertarians, conservatives, and lovers of the Constitution. But the exact opposite is troubling to Ketanji Brown Jackson. And of course it is. She's a damn Marxist.
So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
And the high court also rejected former Trump advisor Peter Navarro's bid to stay out of prison. Chief Justice John Roberts turned down the emergency motion. The 74-year-old former Trump advisor will now have to report to a Miami prison tomorrow, on Tuesday, to serve his four-month sentence. The conviction is for defying a House January 6th committee subpoena.
Wow, just wow. I don't know if you guys feel the same way I do about this. A Supreme Court justice arguing that the government can crush free speech it doesn't like, simply because it doesn't trust its citizenry to have information and make their own choice. That is extremely troubling to me. Please, if you're watching this on Patreon, Locals, or listening to it on Spotify, or watching on Spotify, go ahead and put your comments down below. What do you feel about all this? Is this troublesome to you? Now, we know that Ketanji Brown Jackson was a Marxist and a diversity hire. She's a lightweight. You know, a lot of people, when they are promoted, there's something called the imposter syndrome. You feel like you don't belong, that you're not the real deal. Like, for instance, if I ever went to D.C. and I was in the Senate, and I was next to great minds like Dr. Rand Paul, who I've showed you the same tweet twice in this report, because it's so vital, such a good tweet as far as breaking down the importance of this Murphy versus Missouri case. If I were around someone like Ted Cruz, who is the smartest guy in the room in many aspects, you would get the imposter syndrome. But our justices on the Supreme Court should be the creme de la creme when it comes to jurisprudence, when it comes to application of the law, when it comes to knowledge of the law. And the highest law in the land is the U.S. Constitution, which has been amended by the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, and subsequent amendments. You can't get that wrong. And you can't get the wrong people or the wrong person there. And Ketanji Brown Jackson, it's evident that that has happened right before our eyes. Okay, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, was very busy today. We had something else happen as well. As Alito was going forward and extending the stay against Texas, as CBS News reported, we had something else happen as well legally. Once again, in a detriment to Trump, or in this case, one of Trump's absolute best during his first term. And I'm talking about the great Peter Navarro.
And the high court also rejected former Trump advisor Peter Navarro's bid to stay out of prison. Chief Justice John Roberts turned down the emergency motion. The 74-year-old former Trump advisor will now have to report to a Miami prison tomorrow, on Tuesday, to serve his four-month sentence. The conviction is for defying a House January 6th committee subpoena.
Once again, if you're on this program, you know that I absolutely detest or am irked by the idea that Justice Roberts is a conservative. Though sometimes he votes conservative, he has shown to be a tool of the deep state. That was very evident when he made the argument and made Obamacare possible by saying that it was essentially a tax. Absolute, you know, that a president can make tax and have Congress pass a law demanding that you have health care or that you be penalized for it as a tax. Ever since then, it should have been obvious that Justice Roberts is not on our side, and he continues to show that, like what he just did to Peter Navarro, who said that he had executive privilege because he's working for President Trump, and that's why he didn't cooperate. Yet Hunter Biden gets a pass for doing the same thing. Welcome to the United States of America, the land of the lawless and disorder. What a sad place we're in. And I say welcome to the United States, but I am currently not in the United States. But I'll give you some more background on that in our next report tomorrow. Thanks for being here. And once again, you make this show possible. Thanks for your patience. Until the next one, ciao, goodbye, God bless.
We're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.